Well, whether it's summer road trips or daily commutes or just people running errands, there are an awful lot of cars on the road. There are bikes on the road too, even those scooter things. And that can lead to a lot of conflict. That's our topic this morning, sharing the road and some strategies for reducing conflicts between folks using various modes of transportation. We talk about various conflicts in everyday life and take your calls about once per quarter here on KGNU. I'm Sam Fuqua, co-host of the program, along with former State Senator Linda Newell. Linda, it's great to see you this morning.
Good to be with you, Sam.
And we have two guests with us in studio, Sergeant Troy Kessler from the Colorado State Patrol Public Affairs Office. Sergeant Kessler has been with the State Patrol for 9 years. A lot of those years, he was working the roads in Steamboat Springs and Golden before moving to the Public Affairs Department. Sergeant Troy Kessler, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you for having me.
On the phone with us, Peter Piccolo. He's the Executive Director of Bicycle Colorado, a member-supported nonprofit organization that is dedicated to ensuring that riding a bicycle is always safe and accessible for everyone. Peter Piccolo, good morning. Let's see if we got Peter there. Oh, looks like we lost Peter, but he'll call back in and we'll get him with us in just a minute. But let's start with you, Sergeant Troy Kessler from the Colorado State Patrol Public Affairs Office. What are some of the most common complaints, concerns that you hear from members of the public or that your own colleagues who are out there on the roads deal with every day as far as conflicts?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. We get a lot of response from the public, and we do see it out there all the time. But there is a lot of aggressive driving behavior out there. I've gotten numerous emails in the last week or so with people just asking, what are we doing with the aggressive driving behavior? That can be speeding, weaving through traffic, tailgating, things like that. But people see those all the time, and it's a big issue that people want addressed.
I have that issue. I had it this morning. I drove from Littleton up to Boulder to be in studio today, and I want to ask you, this happened to me today. If somebody gets behind you and they are tailgating you and you can't move over yet because of the there's no place to go yet, that it scares me because I don't have the room if I need to stop or swerve from a pothole or, whatever. And I don't want to flip them off. That's not my style. I have been told to tap my brakes lightly, so it kind of gives them a notice that, hey, get off my butt, so to speak. But what should we do to not create more conflict than there is?
Right, that's a great question. Really, there's a kind of a number of things that you can do. And I literally just taught my daughter this, who is 16 and just got her driver's license. So, one thing I told her is space really is your friend. And the space that you can control is really to the front of you and to the sides. The rear is a little bit less controllable. So, if you keep a good following distance between you and a vehicle in front of you, that will allow you time to stop slowly and kind of control the person behind you. In addition to that, I mean, just to remember, we don't want to engage them. I don't necessarily suggest tapping your brakes. Sometimes certain people that will aggravate them more. But keep, the speed limit and at a place when they're able to, whenever you're able to turn off, or maybe you can change lanes or they can change lanes, just be predictable and let them go around you when they can safely do so.
Can I ask a follow-up to that? If what is the rule, or is there a rule, if you do have the ability to change out of, say, the left lane into the right so that someone behind you in the left can pass, like what is the requirement there or the recommendation?
Yeah, so technically, Colorado, we have a left lane law, but that is specifically for highways 65 miles per hour or greater. So C-470, I-25, things like that. And that only applies to the left lane. That's for passing. So on roads that are 40, 45, you can be in that left lane. It's more a common courtesy to drive in the right, unless you need to be in the left to make a left-hand turn or unless you're passing. But from a legal standpoint, you can be in that left lane driving the speed limit.
Unless you're on a highway where the speed limit is 65 or higher.
Correct.
Then someone's coming up behind you, you're required to move over. Is that?
Yeah, that's just a good rule of thumb. Yeah, but the other kicker with that is a lot of people think left lane law means that you can go faster than the speed limit. The speed limit is still the same in the left lane. So if you're passing at the speed limit, just because somebody's going 80 doesn't necessarily mean you need to get out of their way. It's a good rule of thumb to follow. But
all right, that's Sergeant Troy Kessler from the Colorado State Patrol. Also with us now by phone is Peter Piccolo, Executive Director of Bicycle Colorado. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning.
Let's ask a cyclist the same question as we asked Troy Kessler to start. From the perspective of Bicycle Colorado, what are the most common complaints and concerns you hear from the folks you represent?
Well, I think the most common thing that we hear is drivers don't fully understand the rules of the road as it pertains to bicyclists. Colorado has passed a number of laws over the last couple of years that provide added protections for people on bikes or people who are walking. There's also more bike infrastructure that people are seeing, green paint. People aren't quite sure how to navigate that. And so, you know, when you're pedaling a bike and you're doing everything right according to the law, it could still frustrate drivers because drivers don't, you know. For example, like in Colorado, a bicyclist can treat a stop sign as a yield sign and a red light as a stop sign in many situations. And, you know, that could frustrate drivers. And the other thing we hear is people are just driving too fast. Too many people are not obeying the speed limit. And then people are driving distracted. I mean, it's not uncommon for me, at least, when I'm driving a car, riding a bike, and you look over to the person next to you in a car, and they're looking at their phone while they're driving. And that's pretty concerning when you're on a bike, because there's quite the power imbalance between, you know, somebody driving a 5,000-pound vehicle and somebody on a bike. And, you know, if there is conflict between the two, you know, the bicyclist or the pedestrian is always gonna lose that conflict.
Well, thanks, Peter Piccolo from Bicycle Colorado. A lot to talk about there. Troy Kessler, Peter said he's hearing from his members that people just seem to be going faster. I mean, do we have data on that? Is that an anecdotal observation? What do we know about speeds of motorists in Colorado?
I don't have the data with me, but I'm sure there is data on that. But I think just from a general observation from a law enforcement perspective, but even just from the public perspective, you guys driving on the roadways as well, it's very clear that people are driving faster now. And something that I've told people too is people always ask me, hey, how fast can I go over the speed limit? Can I go 5 miles per hour over? And the answer legally is no, you can't. The speed limit is a speed limit, but we time and time again see people going over that speed limit. And when people kind of follow suit and everybody is going over the speed limit almost becomes irrelevant and they kind of set their own speed. And so now nobody's going the speed limit, and hence this kind of huge problem that we have going on right now.
And I want to ask a question about the green paint, because that has confused me, and whether Peter or Troy takes this one. Just an example from my own neighborhood. I live in the north end of Boulder, so as I head up North Broadway and prepare to turn right onto Yarmouth to get home, there is a wide lane of the horizontal green paint. And I'm not sure, is that my turn lane, or am I to keep that open for the cyclist and execute my right turn from the main lane that I'm in? I hope I've explained that clearly enough, but I'm not sure what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah, most simply, green paint is bike space, and the driver should should preserve that space for bicyclists, similar to a bike lane. Bicyclists have right of way in a bike lane, even through an intersection. So if you're in a bike lane approaching an intersection, you're not going to see the paint of the bike lane through the intersection, but by law, that bicyclist has the right of way. That bike lane continues through the intersection. There is some data on speeding. So CDOT, if I just can share that with you all in the audience. So CDOT publishes this data. So roughly 40% of traffic fatalities in Colorado, of which there were 745 fatalities, traffic fatalities in 2022, about 40% of those, or 300 fatalities, are due to speeding, and roughly 1,500 serious injuries. We also know from a recent study by the AAA Foundation, I think it was published in June of 2021, that if you're going about 30 miles an hour and you hit somebody outside of a vehicle, say a pedestrian or bicyclist, it's a 25% chance that that person will die. And if you're traveling 50 miles per hour, it's a 75% chance. So, I mean, it's basic physics. I mean, if you're driving faster and you hit somebody, you know, the outcome isn't going to be great. But, you know, again, 40% of 745 fatalities are due to speeding.
And that's Peter Piccolo, Executive Director of Bicycle Colorado. Also with us from the Colorado State Patrol, Sergeant Troy Kessler. The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242. If email is easier for you, email DJ, letter D, letter J, DJ at KGNU.org. Linda?
I had a question, and Pete, I don't remember what year this was, but when we did that legislation about the extra space, the 3-foot space between cars and bikes, have you seen that help? And then Sergeant Kessler, have you seen accidents because people don't get out of the way of bicycles, especially on the the state highways that are the windy state highways? I've noticed those can be problematic. So I had questions for both you and Pete.
Pete, you want to go first?
Yeah. So it's the 3 feet to pass law, and I too forgot when it passed, probably maybe 5 years ago. And in a nutshell, the law says that a driver needs to provide a bicyclist at least 3 feet when passing from the furthest point of their car, which is typically a rear view mirror, to the furthest point of the bicyclist, and that a driver can also, when the right of way is clear for them, to cross a double yellow line to do that. Otherwise, you know, if it's not safe, you have to wait until you can provide a bicyclist 3 feet to pass. So we're just now working with CDOT to install 3 feet to pass signs across the state, replacing share of the road signs. So hopefully the impact of that law will be greater as those signs are installed and the public is more aware of the law. It's hard to know. I mean, intuitively, you think, yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I know when I'm out riding, I'm not always given 3 feet to pass, but often I am. And, you know, whether that driver is thinking about the law or not, you know, it's hard to know. But again, it's kind of an intuitive or common practice that people should be following just to, again, keep everyone safe.
Yeah, and I would echo that. I have seen a number of crashes where people violate that 3-foot rule. One particular instance coming to mind was up on a windy road up near Conifer, and a vehicle was passing a bicyclist in a curve, and they didn't provide the 3-foot because there was an oncoming vehicle coming the opposite direction. And for those of you who don't kind of know those roadways, it's only one lane each direction, separated by a double yellow line. And so the vehicle driver didn't want to go into the oncoming lane, didn't think that he could cross over the double yellow to pass the biker when he could, but he would have to wait to safely pass the biker, wait for the other vehicle to pass him, and then he could go over the double yellow to allow that 3-foot.
But he didn't do that.
No, he did not do that.
And so you're supposed to wait. Instead of going over the double yellow line, then you're just supposed to wait until the oncoming car passes and then go, right?
Right. No matter what, you have to wait for it to be safe. So if there's traffic coming toward you, of course you don't want to go over that double yellow line end up going head on with another vehicle. We don't want that. But wait behind the bicyclist, wait for the oncoming vehicle to pass, and then when it's safe, you can see enough that you know you can go over the double yellow safely and pass the bike with that 3 feet at least, you're okay to do so.
Let's take a call. This is Perry. Hi, Perry. You're on KGNU.
I'd like to first start out with that I rode a bicycle entirely for 3 years for transportation, so I know what it's like to be a bicyclist and a motorist. I live up Sunshine Canyon, and I often travel on other roads that have single-file signs, and the bicyclists do not seem like they can read or pay attention to that sign in the majority of the cases. They ride four or five wide, take up the entire lane, and there's no place safe to pass them. And I always obey the three-foot rule. I don't cross the double yellow line to pass the group of them, but I do honk at them and I yell at them to ride single file, and I get flipped off a lot. And they don't realize that they're putting themselves and everyone else in danger when they're riding like that.
Well, let's get Peter Piccolo's response to that first. Thanks, Perry.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for the question, Perry. So a couple things on riding single file. So the signs that we see around Colorado, they're yellow road signs, are cautionary signs that recommend to cyclists, you should be riding single file because it's safer to do so. And you'll typically see them on windy mountain roads where there are blind spots. But the law in Colorado doesn't say that you cannot ride two abreast. In fact, it says specifically you can ride two abreast if it doesn't inhibit the normal and reasonable flow of traffic. So, I mean, when I'm out on a country road and it's a straightaway and there's very little traffic and I'm riding next to my friend and it doesn't inhibit the flow of traffic. So riding single file all the time is not the law. Now, you know, riding three, four, five abreast, that's a problem because you're inhibiting the normal reasonable flow of traffic. You're completely blocking the lane. And we continue to do, at Bicycle Colorado, we continue to do our very best to inform bicyclists of what the laws are, to be respectable, courteous users of the road and to, you know, not ride three, four abreast.
Yeah, it's tricky. And Perry described his response when he comes across cyclists doing that. But it's not like we can slow down and have a rational, you know, roll down the window as we're passing them or something and say, hey, could you please, when a car is behind you, you know, get back to single file? You can't do that. So I guess it's just really more about public education, right, Peter?
Yeah, and I would say we can do that, though.
We can?
I mean, you can slow down and we could be civil to each other. I mean, what the bicyclist did to Perry is not acceptable either. I certainly don't condone that. But I can tell you, you know, like Perry, I do drive a lot and I ride my bike a lot. And I have been the target of a significant amount of aggression over the years, unwarranted aggression. And after a while, like, I'm just trying to, like, ride my bike to work, keep myself safe, get a little exercise. I'm like, why are you being so nasty to me? And, you know, it kind of, the frustration builds up for all of us, and we don't always show our best behavior in those situations. But yeah, I mean, like, I've been at intersections where, you know, something's happened, I pull up and I'm like, hey, man, like, what's going on? And try to have a civil conversation about it. And it doesn't always work. And, but yeah, and then it comes back to education. You're right. Like, ideally, people will know, like, you can ride two abreast in many situations, and hopefully if people know the law, that particular conflict wouldn't happen.
And what I see typically is if I'm driving and there's, you know, two cyclists riding two abreast, they know that I'm coming up behind them, and they go back to single file. That's my typical experience. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, Linda, is that the case for you?
Yeah, I absolutely, usually, because I'm on the western part, so I'll be on 285 or I'll be on C-470 or I'll be on some of those roads over there. And that is what I see driving up to the mountains. I did have one question about when there is aggression, what to do in the moment, because both parties are feeling it. We're talking about conflict on the roads today. What do we do?
Yeah, and I'll start that one off, I guess. Really, I think what we touched on with the last caller and the question is that for everybody to be safe on the roadway, it takes cooperation, and it takes a level of respect for each the driver, the bicyclist, or pedestrian on the roadway. And we have to operate together and be respectful of one another to do so. But when you get into a conflict, I think one good thing to do is, and we're told this like in relationship kind of counseling, is prepare, like get the mental mindset before you get out there on the road. How are you going to handle it when you're confronted with a road rage incident or some aggressive driver toward you? And just having that mental preparation, knowing that number one, we don't want you to engage because you really don't know what that person that you're in contact with is capable of or what they would do. You don't know what's going on in their life or what will tip them off. And so we really don't encourage any kind of confrontation with that. And I haven't myself seen an aggressive driver. I've never heard of it anyway, where an aggressive driver yells, flips somebody off, and it changes that person's behavior. It really just makes them maybe more resentful or not willing to make the change anyway. Mm-hmm. So I think, to Pete's response, it comes down to education as well.
Mm-hmm. We're at 303-442-4242, talking about conflicts on the roads this morning. I'm Sam Fuqua. My co-host is former State Senator Linda Newell. We have Sergeant Troy Kessler with us from the Colorado State Patrol, and Peter Piccolo is on the line, Executive Director of Bicycle Colorado. You are in tune with KGNU FM 88.5 Boulder, KGNU 1390 Denver. A comment here in the email from Evan saying a year ago, Colorado changed its bicycle laws so that a cyclist can treat a stop sign as a yield sign and a stoplight as a stop sign. And we addressed that at the start of the program. Evan says, yet a year later, I'm often honked or yelled at by drivers who seem unaware of this. If the city wants to reduce road rage and other incidents, it should publicize this new law. Otherwise, cyclists who are attacked by the ignorant could sue the city for not giving notification. So anecdotal information from one frequent cyclist that motorists get ticked off when the cyclist, just observing the current law, which is you can roll through a stop sign, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And I know State Patrol, we did do a media push back when this law passed a year ago. And in addition, I know Pete and his agency that he works for have been doing a lot of education efforts as well. I've met a lot of people that don't watch the news anymore. So they go and search for their news online. And so, maybe that's just something that we need to be paying attention to, partnering with, other media sources that do online messages like that. But, it's out there.
And if I could add, that is a problem with every law we pass, that people don't know every single, we pass hundreds of bills every single year, and it's hard to get the communication out there. So maybe what we could do actually right now is to talk about, you can go on to Bicycle Colorado for some education resources there. You can go to, is it Colorado State Patrol?
You can always Google it and find it pretty easily, okay. But it's csp.colorado.gov.
Okay.
And we're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join our conversation, or dj@kgnu.org if you'd like to email. Joanne emailed in. She says, I travel Sunshine and Left Hand Canyon a lot. We see bikers who are literally in a racing stance as they fly down the hill, trying to experience top speeds and the thrill of excessive motion. I guess cycling like this on public roads is obviously dangerous for all. What can be done? Peter Piccolo, do you have any ideas on that? People are heading downhill on their bikes and they're going up really fast.
Well, I have to know more about the context. I mean, going downhill fast isn't necessarily against the law or problematic. I mean, there are roads where, you know, you have downhill speed. So for vehicles of 55 miles an hour, if the bike's traveling 35 miles an hour and respecting the space, then, you know, I don't know if that's not a bad thing. But, you know, it still comes back to being aware of the public space that we all occupy and being courteous to others, making choices to keep ourselves and others safe. And, you know, if you're descending a road going fast on a bicycle and you're not breaking the speed limit, then, you know, then, I don't see that as a problem.
Sergeant Troy Kessler, anything to add?
I mean, I would really just echo all of that. It just kind of made me funny, but I there was a bicyclist that I met that was kind of impressed with a ticket that he got for speeding. So they do go fast, but again, if they're not going over the speed limit, and they are respecting their space and being a good partner out there on the roadway, it's not necessarily speed in and of itself is not necessarily a problem.
So question, tandem to that is, we've been talking about the bicycle laws and single file and all of that. What about the motorcyclists? Are there particular laws that we need to pay attention to as drivers? So, for instance, the splitting law, did that happen this year? And can, if for those of us, for those people who are new to Colorado, can you explain a little bit about what the laws are around that, and did that pass? I mean, I
don't know what the splitting law is, so you'll have to help me out with that.
So the a motorcycle has to operate the same way as a vehicle does in Colorado. We do not have the lane splitting law. I know it was proposed last year, but it did not pass.
What does that mean?
So I know there are some states that have it. In particular, California has it. I don't know all of the details of the law, but basically allows a motorcycle to go between vehicles when they're passing. I believe it only applies to the left lane. I've just watched some informational things about it. But in Colorado in particular, it's very dangerous because it's not a law. And even though there, people have shown some data that it's actually safer for motorcyclists. It's not a law here, so I would argue that it's not safer for motorcyclists here because, again, that whole educational component, when drivers don't know that or aren't expecting a motorcycle to go in between the vehicles, that poses a huge life risk for that motorcyclist. And similar to a bicyclist, a motorcycle just occupies less space, it weighs less, and they're going to be on the losing end.
And I suspect most drivers, myself included, have had the experience of maybe we're on the highway and traffic's kind of slow, and then suddenly, like, zoom, you know, a quick bike, a motorcycle whizzes by, you know, between the two lanes. Again, against the law in Colorado, as well as kind of freaks me out as a driver.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. We have a couple callers, including Joan and Conifer. Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. I don't know if you're familiar. Somebody mentioned Conifer earlier, and 285 is a U.S. highway. However, when you said the speed limit of 65 for people using the left lane only for passing, that's quite a problem with this kind of highway because the speed limit is usually around 50, it's supposed to be 50, 55, something like that, 60 even. But, you know, for this east end of the highway, it doesn't have 65 miles an hour. So could someone comment on that discrepancy or... Because it really is, I mean, it really does cause problems when people insist on driving in the left lane.
Oh, I see. So, Joan, you're asking about the rule that people going slow in the left lane have to move over, but that's only a rule when it's 65 miles and up, and you're suggesting that on...
Actually, they're going to speed limit.
So what's the problem?
No, they're not going to speed limit. You're right. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's when they're slow.
In the left lane.
In the left lane.
And is you're feeling like that should be a rule at speeds lower than 65 miles an hour?
Well, that's what I'm wondering about because we don't want to pass on the right. That's really dangerous.
Well, we'll get Sergeant Troy Kessler from the State Patrol to comment on that, and thanks for joining the conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. That is a good question, and I think held by many people that live out there in Evergreen or Bailey Conifer area. Let me just say this. As far as the left lane law is concerned, it does only speak to traffic going 65 miles per hour. And then that requirement to move over to the right lane when you're not passing. Now, you're right. Highway 285 in the stretch that you're talking about, a lot of times is either, 45 or 55 in most places. And although the left lane law does not apply there, there is another law impeding the flow of traffic. Now, if they're going the speed limit 55 and they're not really impeding the flow of traffic, they can be going 55 and still passing other vehicles or still basically being allowed to be in that left lane. Now, if that person in the left lane starts to slow down the flow of traffic, then that can be a violation. And there's certain things that officers look for there, but that's another. And then also, I just wanted to throw out there, it is not illegal to pass on the right. If somebody in the left lane is not moving over, because we don't know what they're thinking, or maybe it's just education or, things like that, or maybe they're elderly or something like that. But there's a number of factors. But if you can do so safely, pass on the right, you're well within your legal bounds to do so safely into the speed limit.
All right. Thanks for that call, Joan. Let's hear from June now. June in Wheat Ridge. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, how are y'all?
Doing okay. How are you? What's your question?
Good. Oh, yes. With the weather getting warmer, I got kids that are graduated out of Boulder, riding around on their e-bikes and doing their fun summer stuff as teachers and experiencing, going up the canyons and doing on the big, in fact, my youngest, he's actually 28, he's going to ride with a friend, and they're going to ride up the canyon, one of the canyons, for 8 miles today. And, he's excited about it. Him and his friend are amateurs. They ride around, on their bikes and e-bikes, and as they're heading up, it's a concern for me and his very life, actually. And I'm wondering, is there really new safe ways that, or any ways that he can guarantee to get up there on a safe trail, like a bike trail, that once he starts heading up the canyons out of Boulder and gets off that one bike trail, then what would you recommend for a safe journey up and back? And what kind of risks would you bring up to him about some of these, motorcycles and other bikes that are speeding down? What are the safety rules that these young people coming out of Boulder with their inner tubes, their bikes, all their activities coming down, up and down the canyons? And just, you guys are the expert here, and I'm hoping there's going to be new, things going on in the future, too, about safer bike trails versus the e-bikes that, they might be taking today. And the whole, everything orchestrating together just seems, to me as a 65-year-old, seems kind of outrageous that I wouldn't do myself unless I was on a bike trail,
Well, thank you.
So I appreciate anything you got. I got my son on the, and listening at, on KGNU this morning, too. Hi,
excellent.
Hi, Ben.
Okay. Concerned mother, June, asking a couple of questions there. And Peter Piccolo, let's get your response first. And she brings up a good point. With the advent of e-bikes, a lot more people have the ability to go up those steep roads and get into the mountains. What should they be thinking about in terms of safety? And then we'll also ask Sergeant Troy Kessler.
Yeah, Yeah, well, first, I'm a little jealous. I want to join Ben as I'm sitting here at my desk. So I'll share with you what I share with my kiddos when they go out and ride. So first, try to pick the safest routes possible. So know the terrain, and I'm thinking about Boulder and going up Boulder Canyon. You know, there's some bike paths that are coming out of town, but then the bike paths do end, and then there are options to the right and left that have significantly less traffic. I wouldn't recommend going like straight up Boulder Canyon, north to Netherland, let's say. So, you know, pick routes where A, there's just less traffic. Two, always use lights even during the day. So white light in the front, red flashing light in the back. You know, three, while I hesitate to provide this recommendation because it camouflages some root cause issues here, similar to having lights is, you know, bright clothing. You want to be seen. Four, ride defensively. So I always tell, you know, my kids, I say, like, listen, you can't expect that people are going to stop at stop signs or stop at red lights. So just ride in a protective stance. And then, you know, follow the rules of the road as well. And the last thing I'll throw out there, if you have the money, there's some technology now where if you have like a bike computer, there are cameras and sensors where that you can put on your bike. It's a light kind of camera sensor, and it'll tell you when traffic is coming behind you, and it'll show up on your bike computer. So without, you know, maybe looking over your shoulder, and sometimes you just don't even know when traffic's coming up behind you, it'll warn you like there's traffic coming, and that'll give you an indication to, you know, maybe move over a little bit on the side of the road.
Thanks, Peter Piccolo from Bicycle Colorado. Sergeant Troy Kessler from the State Patrol, anything to add to that?
I think that was a fantastic response, and I definitely learned something there as well. I guess I would just stress or reiterate also, just being a good bicyclist, obeying the laws as well, making sure you're visible. I've, again, told my daughter this before. When you're crossing the road as a pedestrian or on a bike, there's so many people that don't look at traffic. They just see the white figure that says, okay, it's okay to cross. Even though you have the right-of-way or even though you're doing everything right, just always be aware of what the other vehicles are doing, because at the end of the day, you're the one that loses. And then I would also echo choosing routes with the least traffic, the best and safest option for you.
So Boulder Canyon Road might not be your best way up into the mountains from Boulder, son Ben and mom June. Thanks for the call, June. Let me read an email that's come in from Crew, I think. Trail Ridge Road, is it okay for a cyclist to use the whole road to descend, given that they can navigate the curves easier by using the entire road space and not impede the flowing traffic? I think we covered this earlier, but just to reiterate, if you're descending, you as a cyclist, you can use the whole road. Is that correct, Troy Kessler? Or
Yes, you can take the full lane, not only when descending, but when it's safer to do so. So you may find yourself in a situation where maybe there's parked cars or debris on the side of the road, and it's just safer to be visible and take the full lane. So bicyclists are by law allowed to take the full lane.
And I would also just say, like, even this time of year, there's still a lot of gravel on the roads from the winter season. That gravel tends to hang out on the right side and sometimes right in the middle of the lane a little bit now, but they can do what they need to do to navigate those turns safely.
And not only gravel, but all of those potholes. So I know that some people are getting really upset about the potholes. We're used to some, but we've got a lot this year because of all the rain. Do you know, Sergeant, about any, and this is probably a Department of Transportation question, CDOT, but do you know anything about scheduling of potholes from CDOT or...
I know they're always doing ongoing pothole repairs. CDOT does only the state highways and the interstates, but a lot of the local county road and bridge departments do the other roads. A lot, so just something to think about when you're trying to report them. I would even imagine that some of those places have an online reporting system.
Let's hear from,
I know the city of Denver does have reporting, but I don't know about the other cities or counties, but that is a great suggestion for people to report those.
And let's go back to the phones. A lot of action on the phones this morning. Jim from Boulder, hi, you're on the air.
For the Bicycle Colorado guy, do you recommend everyone have a mirror on their bike or on their helmet? And then someone once wrote, the New York Bike Snob blog said, flashing rear lights attract drunk drivers, so is it better to have a steady rear light or flashing? And then for the state patrol guy, should you pull over? And also the bicycle guy, like, if you're driving a car and people tailgate you on a mountain road, should you pull off? And also, if a bunch of people accumulate behind you, even though you're driving the speed limit on a mountain road, should you pull off? And finally, are there any laws about cell phones that are being enforced so that, because everybody you see driving usually is on the cell phone, and that feels dangerous when I'm biking. And I guess that's about it. Although, what can you do? There's some guy on Lee Hill that I think tried to kill some person running him off the road and then later killed another person. And then I never know whether he actually got sentenced. It seems sometimes car drivers aren't sentenced as if they used a gun or a fracking well or a coal Excel power plant to kill people. They're sentenced as if they didn't really break the law.
Well, Jim, thanks for those questions. We'll get to as many of them as we can. And when we start with Peter Piccolo, a couple of very bike-specific questions there, Peter, including I was interested in either of your response to the question of steady light versus flashing light. And I think if I understood Jim correctly, one may actually attract someone who's impaired behind the wheel. Have you heard about that, Peter Piccolo?
No, I have not heard about the flashing light idea. I always recommend a flashing light. I use a flashing light, but I have not seen any research on whether that attracts impaired drivers or not. I think what's most important is, you know, people get lights on their bike. I don't see that enough. Jim also asked about mirrors. I mean, it's a personal preference, of course, and I always recommend mirrors, bells, helmets. But it's ultimately, you know, a personal choice.
Yeah, regarding the flashing light and attraction to drunk drivers, I have heard that reference. I don't know if that's reference to a study or something else, but I have heard it referenced before. I would still say that in general, you are still more safe to be visible and have a light, whether you put it on steady or strobing mode. I think that will still keep you safer. The other questions that you asked a lot, hopefully I can remember what some of them are here.
If driving on a mountain road and you're being tailgated, do you pull over?
Yeah, so I would say this comes back to, you know, just being courteous and operating as a team out there on the roadway. Even though you're going the speed limit, if you do see a bunch of people kind of piling up behind you, sometimes those mountain roads, it's hard to know when there's going to be a pull off. But if you can safely pull off and let that traffic pass, it's great. It reinforces that partnership and courtesy that we should all have, and just allow those people to pull off. Sometimes, even though the speed limit, that can lend itself to road rage issues and people, again, you don't know what they're what's going on in their personal life, what they're trying to get to, whether it be a tragedy or you know, something. You don't know what they're going to do and try to pass, you know, five cars. So if you can be courteous and move off, definitely do so.
And that is a killer for the rule followers, because they're like, I'm going to show everybody that we're going to follow the rule today. But we did miss one from Jim's, which is cell phone laws. I know when I was in the legislature, we played with that a lot. What is the current status of any cell phone laws that we have in Colorado?
So it used to be, at least for people over the age of 18, an officer would see them manipulating the device, and you could pull them over for texting or manipulation. Now, you are able to talk on the cell phone, It's different for people just getting their license, 16 to 18 years old. They can't be on it at all. But now the law has changed, and I think that went to effect, I want to say, a couple years ago now. But it's basically made it the penalty harsher for texting or manipulating that device. But it makes it harder also for law enforcement to enforce. So it's basically a secondary violation. So we have to see it, and then we have to see a careless driving action to pull it over and cite it. And if we do that, then it's, I think it's over $300 ticket. Whereas before, if we just saw them pull them over, I think it was around $65 or so. So it's definitely harsher, but there is definitely more that goes into the law that we have to follow before we can actually pull somebody over for them.
That was my amendment on the bill, which is funny, but so that still stays intact with the 16 to 18 then, but everybody else can do whatever they want. Not whatever they want, but what I mean is there's no hands-free requirement for Colorado yet.
Correct.
Well, let's just put a finer point on what Sergeant said. I mean, you're not allowed to text. You're not allowed to text,
right.
No matter what's your age. You can't text.
Yes.
And can I ask Peter Piccolo, does that apply to cyclists as well? Obviously, it's much more dangerous for a motorist, but I have seen guys riding no-handed on their bikes and looking at their phones.
Correct. Yeah, you should not be texting probably while you're walking as well. But
right.
Yeah, it's not a smart thing to be operating a vehicle or a bike and texting. I mean, I think it's also important to point out that there are other factors that contribute to distracted driving. We tend to zero in on cell phone use, and it's understandable, but now more cars have pretty engaging dashboards. People are still eating and driving, children in the back seat. And we just need to, when we're operating such a big vehicle, particularly around, you know, other people, bikes and pedestrians, I mean, we just need to stay focused on the task at hand, which is getting from point A to point B safely.
And let's go back to the phones and hear from Carrie in Boulder. Hi, Carrie.
Hello.
Yeah, you're on the air. What's your question?
Well, thanks for all the pertinent info. I am unclear. Where is it that I can expect the electric scooters to be riding or the e-bikes to be riding, especially along the creek path and walking around? Especially the scooters, it can be such a surprise. They're weaving around. I'm just curious what the law is, especially for them.
Thank you for asking that, Carrie. And before we got on air, I was asking a similar question. Let's go to Sergeant Troy Kessler first, and then also would really like to hear from Peter Piccolo about the scooters.
Yeah, Pete, you may know a lot more about this than I do. I was literally kind of looking up some stuff before I came on air here. But basically, a lot of those things that are coming out now are considered electric or low-powered scooters. And a lot of times, those can be operated on sidewalks and on bike paths and things like that, unless there's things that prohibit them from doing that. But a lot of times they need to follow the same rules. Again, we come back to being considerate and respectful of everybody out there. Somebody on a scooter does not necessarily, they don't just have the right of way to do whatever they want. They need to be aware of other vehicle traffic as well, and pedestrians. But they should be operating in as safe as manner as they possibly can, to the right of a lane, unless they need to position themselves in a safer position to go where they're going.
Now, but to one of Carrie's questions, and either of you can take this, is the scooter supposed to be in the bike lane, or is it supposed to be on the sidewalk?
Well,
the bike lane.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah. Go ahead.
The bike lane.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, scooters should be in the bike lane.
Yeah, okay, great. Because I almost had a tragedy in my own vehicle with a scooter coming up super fast on the sidewalk. And so I kind of was interested in the rules for scooters. And I know the general thing is just everybody be aware, don't go too fast, and try to be constantly in tune with your surroundings. But it's it has added a new dimension both for the motorist and I would say as a pedestrian, you know, when the scooters are coming up on the sidewalk, kind of makes things a little tricky as well.
Yeah. I think it's worth pointing out too. I mean, cause I've ridden, I'm not a frequent scooter user, but I have used them. And I mean, many people will pop up on the sidewalk cause it's the only safe option, which, you know, again, I'm not condoning riding on sidewalks. I mean, I think we need to create spaces that are speed appropriate. But I mean, and I'll be honest with you. I mean, I have for like a block or two because there was just nowhere else to go, which is really a call for better infrastructure. I just also want to respond to the bike specific question or e-bike specific question. So class 1 and 2 e-bikes, which have top speeds of, I think it's 19 miles an hour, and class 2 has you can ride with just a throttle, so you don't have to pedal. They're allowed on roadways, designated bike lanes, multi-use trails, and typically in other areas where there's non-motorized biking, there's some local control in Colorado statute, and so it may vary from municipality to municipality. And then class 3 bikes, which have top speeds of, I want to say, 28 miles an hour, are only allowed on designated roadways and designated bike lanes as well.
What about Segways?
Does anybody use a Segway these days?
Yeah.
downtown.
Yeah, downtown, you know, they have those Capitol tours and stuff. What about those?
Pete, you know much about those?
I don't want to speak out of school, but I will. I'm pretty certain that, like, any motorized transport, you know, falls into a category where, again, not on, I'm talking about motorized segways, I think we were talking about. I mean, it's right, Linda?
You see them go up on the sidewalks. I'm thinking about also skateboards. You know, you see them go on the sidewalks and go kind of in and out of people as they're, you know, walking. And of course, I'm sure that creates conflict sometimes, or even physical conflict sometimes.
Well, let's
right. What?
Sorry, go ahead, Peter.
Like one wheels, you see, like the one wheels, motorized one wheels, motorized skateboards, Segways, so forth. We try to protect sidewalk space for pedestrians. Now, I mean, it's worth noting too that there's not a Colorado law that prohibits other modes of transport on sidewalks, but there are local laws. So, for example, in Denver, you're not supposed to ride your bike on sidewalks, with few exceptions of, like, you're pulling up to your final destination. I think you get like one block where I'm going to roll on the sidewalk up to my final destination. So there's a lot of local control here. But, you know, generally speaking, as a rule of thumb, if you're on a motorized vehicle, electric motor, then you want to avoid sidewalks.
Let's see if we can squeeze in one more call here. Steve from South Boulder, you're on the air.
Oh, super. Thank you. Regarding the protected pedestrian crossway, the place where there's two solid white lines and then more lines in between, and there's a yellow sign that says yield to pedestrians, and it points down directly to the edge of the crossing. Does this protection include bicycles? Is a bicycle included as a pedestrian in a crosswalk?
I see. So if a cyclist is using that protected crosswalk for pedestrians, Steve, is the question, is the motorist required to yield there?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Sergeant Troy Kessler.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting when you talk about crosswalks and bikes, but... yes, if a bicyclist is in the crosswalk, they need to be yielded to. Now, the caveat maybe can be that if a bicyclist is riding in the roadway, they should not be going from the roadway to the sidewalk, going down the crosswalk and then back in the roadway, they're operating as a vehicle there. And from my understanding, they need to stay in the lane of traffic and obey all the laws of traffic. If they're operating on a sidewalk, they need to stay on the sidewalk and then use the crosswalk as well. But you should yield to them if they're there.
All right, and that's about all the time we have. I really want to thank all the callers. Thanks to Alexis for managing the phones. Thanks to the emailers. And big thanks to Peter Piccolo, Executive Director of Bicycle Colorado, and Sergeant Troy Kessler from the Colorado State Patrol. Appreciate you both sharing your expertise with our listeners this morning.